Greetings, you're listening to St. Paul's Unseen Dimension. My name is Tom, and today is Tuesday, June 12th. Wow. No, it's July 12th. Oh my God, why did I say that? It was June. Wow, I must have lost a month. The aliens, when they abducted me, must have really screwed up my bodily clock here. Anyway, we're leading in with some KMFDM Extort. The song is called Rules. And I'm going to go ahead and kill this here real quick. Wanted something different. Hadn't heard this in a long time. Probably since about 1996, maybe. I don't know. It's old. Anyway, things have been really busy around here. It's one of those things where I do podcasts when I got something that I want to do. And not so much that I have a schedule. Most of the time I do. Usually I make time for it, but the last month and a half, it's been so hard for me to find anything to talk about, let alone do something that is going to be either entertaining or isn't the same shit everyone else is doing. The reason why I really want my show to be different than everyone else's for a lot of different reasons. The biggest and the biggest reason is when you do a show that's unique, it's going to bring a certain kind of people to your door. If you're doing what everyone else is doing, then everyone else is, you know, there's a certain homogenization that takes place. My show is for people who like to think and like to think for themselves. This isn't something where I do the show and I'm preaching to a choir or an echo chamber. I would rather have people who are on the fringe of society, people who are on the outskirts, people that are actually feeling like they're the outsiders and they're looking in. You know, I want those people to listen to my show, because there are far more of us than there are of the popular kids. You know what I mean? I grew up in a small town that was very cliquish, and it was based largely around money, and my family was poor. And so as the result of that, I always felt like an outsider. Didn't matter what I was, didn't matter how much I worked, it didn't matter what kind of person I tried to be, I was never, ever going to be good enough. And then I'm gonna go a lot of different places today. The first little bit of the show is not going to be comedy, but I am going to go to the comedy aspects of things here. It will get there, I promise. Because this show is, I haven't done one in quite a while. At least I haven't done one that's been entertaining. And that's what this is. This is what this show is going to be about. But it will be a little bit about personal history and that sort of thing. So there's going to be some things to unwrap. So, but anyway, I was going on about childhood stuff, and I missed my brother's birthday yesterday, so that's another reason why I'm doing the show. I had this thought I was going to do a show yesterday, but I didn't get around to it. I had a lot of stuff happen, and I was going to tell my brother happy birthday. He turned 50. He's an old geezer now. He probably doesn't feel it. He doesn't look it. He's a good guy. He continued to work out and keep himself up as opposed to me, which, you know, I just like said, you know, I'm like 19. I've peaked. I'm done. So anyway, but it's because of him that I have a profoundly different view of my childhood. And there's a lot of anger that I still have, that I still carry from those years, for a number of reasons, and because my brother was the victim of something that should never have happened, and there's just a lot of stuff there, and I feel bad for him, I really do. But he's, you know, his life is what it is. He's a grown adult. He's doing well, and he's chosen a path he's trying to live a life less ordinary, and that's, I mean, he was already there, but he's definitely doing something his own way, and I'm very proud of him. So, but he and I, we were like oil and gasoline. We do not, we might play well together to a point, but once that spark is up, then it's done. You know, everything gets burnt down, and then, you know, we just don't, we're not allowed to be around each other anymore. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. I'm one of these people that, I don't see a point in being a part of someone's life when there's really no place for me in it. And much in the same way that I don't see a lot of places for other people to be in my world. My world is very small, and I have a very, very small group of people that I allow in, mostly because I've had enough of a following and enough friends to find out that some people are just, they're really not your friends. They're just in your orbit in order to watch you fail or to sabotage you or to, you know, just to be that little thorn in your side, you know, and without you knowing it. So I don't allow anyone in my circle unless they really want to be there. That being said, I sat there and I thought about what I was going to do for the show. And I thought, you know what, it's been a while since I actually talked about comedy. And so I'm going to talk about that today. I'm going to do a show devoted to being funny. So here we go. Humor is one of those things that everyone has their own sense of it. You can say something that you think is funny, and there's always going to be one person or everyone that's going to look at what you just said or hear what you said and interpret it in a way that is either going to wound them or they're going to choose to be offended at it. Because we all choose what we're offended by. You know? I'm offended by very few things these days other than just willful ignorance and the intellectual dishonesty. Those are my two big pet peeves. But when it comes to comedy, I think if you can look at the context of what somebody is saying, it can become very humorous. Here's a great example. Yesterday I happened to be at Best Buy, and they have some exercise equipment there and some other stuff, and there's a treadmill. And so anyway, I was talking to this person because they were, you know, they were moving some stuff around and they were talking to me about, oh yeah, we just got this new stuff in. And all these people, and I said, yeah, you know, everyone, you know, staying at home, COVID, everyone's trying to get in shape, da da da, talking about things. And then they were, you know, not expecting it, but I said, you know, I just read this article about Elton John. And they were like, oh, really? And I said, yeah, yeah, he bought a treadmill, and he's got so much money, he's got like a treadmill for his pet rabbit, you know. And this person's like, oh, really? I said, yeah, you know, this rabbit uses the treadmill every day, you know. And he's like, God, what kind of person does that, you know what? How rich do you have to be to buy a treadmill for your rabbit? And I said, yeah, you know, I thought it was a little fit bunny. And just, it went right past that person. They were just like, little fit bunny. And they were like, oh, aha, I see what you did there. I'm like, yes, I'm an old man. I tell dad jokes, you know. And, but that's the kind of humor that some people are into. Some people you can lead them in there, and then, you know, hit them with the punchline, and then they just like, oh. But you know what's really funny is that ever since I said that, I can't hear the song, you know, that that song by Elton John. I can't, you know, it's a little fit bunny. That's I can't hear it. It's a little bit funny is how it starts, but. That's the song that I mean, I can't hear it any other way now. All I hear is, it's a little fit bunny, this feeling. It's, you know, it's one of those things where I just start fucking cracking up over it. It's stupid. But that's the kind of humor that some people, you know, that they understand and they get. And then, you know, there's the more absurdist humor. Humor in that context is a lot more fun, because at that point you can make anybody a willing or unwilling participant. See, I usually I do shopping and stuff like that, and like every other human, and every once in a while I get a wild hair because I'm either not having a very good day or I'm just not having enough fun at someone else's expense. And so sometimes what I'll do is I'll entertain myself by torturing everyone else around me by pretending that I am either from the future or not from this planet. And it's at that point, you know, they're really not sure what I got going on, if I'm mentally ill or if I'm mentally unstable or God knows what could possibly be wrong with me. But I've gone to the farmer's market on occasion, and I remember this little Asian lady asked me, and I know that's a very oblique term, and I probably shouldn't use it, but I don't know what nationality she was. She could have been Vietnamese, could have been any one number, but I use the term Asian, so please don't think that I'm disparaging anyone. Anyway, she asked me, she says, where did you get your pants? And I was wearing these ATAC FG camouflage pants, and this is when they still made them, and before the Ukrainian and Russian militaries adopted them. Now and nobody makes them. I've got a bolt of the fabric, but anyway, long story short, I told her, I said, well, I bought these pants in the future because that's where I'm from. And she's looking at me like, what? I said, yes, I come from the future. And I'm taking pictures of all the plants, because that was the reason why she started talking to me in the first place. I was taking pictures of her plants. And she's like, why are you taking pictures of the plants? I said, well, because first off, in the future, we don't have these there. What? I'm like, yeah, there's all the plant life is gone. The world's a barren wasteland. And all we have are memories, photographs, and crayons. And we have nothing to remind us of what once was. So I wanted to have pictures of flowers for when I go back. And this woman stared at me like she believed me. And then she was like, are you serious? I said, very much so. I'm sorry, but the future is a barren wasteland in 75 years. There's nothing we can do about it. Al Gore was wrong. And then I walk away, you know. And then I notice all of a sudden, like, the cops are following me around. Because they were like, is this guy weird or something, you know? Like, I'm just having fun. Anyway, I bought a bunch of, on that particular outing, I bought a bunch of these Russian tomatoes that I got two harvests out of. They were really great. And then after that guy, apparently he moved on or something like that, because he no longer sells those tomatoes there. So, but when you do comedy like that, situation comedy, I'm not talking about situation comedy like, you know, on television, I'm talking about the things that you can do to make other people's days more surreal. And comedy can be done anywhere. It can be, if you're feeling like you want to make someone laugh, take the shot, you know, and here's the thing is that, you know, but before you do, Know your audience. You know, I've seen people say things that they shouldn't. I've seen people say things that I know when it came out, it was not well received. I myself have stuck my foot in it a number of times, either as the result of being on steroids because of asthma, or just my shitty personality. And sometimes, you know, it took me a long time to grow into this person. It really took me a good four decades to manifest a certain semblance of normalcy and decency. It really did. It took me a long time, mostly because I spent so many years in survival mode and just being overly sensitive to criticism and people. And I think the reason why is because when I was growing up, I had some people really make my life a living hell. when you're bullied incessantly every day by the same group of people, you know, every day from, you know, like third grade on, you know, it has a way of leaving a mark, you know. And when you find out later on that your friends are actually part and parcel with some of the assholes that are fucking with you, you know, it's like that's a betrayal you cannot comprehend. That's grade school, though. That was grade school. In high school, I was a completely different person because we'd moved, and I'd already screwed up pretty good and proper, and there's a lot of stuff. There's more shit to unpack there in that world. But the thing about life and tragedy is it can make you a pretty good comedian. It really can. I see a lot of people that had you know, idyllic childhoods who think they're funny and they're not. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, that somebody's parents thought they were funny and bought them a TV show. You know, I've seen people who, you know, got onto certain television shows like Saturday Night Live only because they were related to somebody else who, you know, wasn't funny either. There's a lot of people in this world that are not funny that are put up on stages for the simple fact that, you know, they're not good at much else. And so this is their parents' way of getting them out of the house. That's the thing about comedy, is that you can be insulting, you can be denigrating, but you should always do something honest. When you say what you mean and you do what you say and you want to actually have fun at it, it should always come from a place of honesty. And this is where I'm going to circle back to the lady that I told I was from the future. You know, the thing about when you tell somebody that you're either a time traveler, you're from the future, or you're not from this planet, you're from a parallel universe, or any one of these other things, right? When you tell somebody that, and you do it with a straight face, if you do it from the idea that, you know, you've never felt like you belonged anywhere, that's honesty. See, I grew up in a way that most people couldn't begin to understand because I had such a home life that I never felt like I belonged anywhere. When your parents don't care about you, that leaves a mark, you know, and then it leads to other things. You know, people talk about absent parents and stuff like that. I was on autopilot the entire time from like five on, you know. And what was really disturbing about all of it is my parents would yell at me like I was an adult, you know, and then beat me like one too, and as opposed to treat me like a child and, you know, help me understand this is what you do, this is what you don't do, you know, fucking raise your child, participate in that. And if all you get is violence and beatings and screaming and, you know, this defective mental illness that was coming out of your parents, you're going to develop some pretty unhealthy coping skills. And luckily out of that, I my sense of humor evolved. And I've got a very bizarre sense of humor. I understand that. I'm not funny to everybody. I am funny when if you're the unsuspecting dupe, and I'm having fun at your expense, and you catch on, then it's funny. But if you're one of these poor hapless fools that has no idea that what I'm doing, and you think that I've actually lost my mind, then I'm sorry. Either I'm a really convincing actor, or, you know, I probably shouldn't have victimized you in that way by trying to make you laugh. See, that's the thing about comedy, is that, you know, you want to be honest about it. You know, it's like magic. The difference between comedy and magic is that you're trying to misdirect somebody and fool them in magic, whereas in comedy, the same kind of inventiveness goes into procuring laughter. See, laughter and amazement walk hand in hand. See, that's the thing, is that, you know, when you cause somebody to think and to ponder and to and to go outside of themselves and look at something in a different way, in a unique way. You're causing this rush of chemicals inside their mind, you know, and so comedy is in fact a form of doing, you know, magic. Now I'm talking about like, boil, toil and trouble. Hey, Fred, it's me, Barney Rubble. That's not the kind of magic I'm talking about. I'm talking about the kind of magic that makes people smile and make them laugh and those things that can take away whatever it is, whatever troubles you may have in that moment. And that way you're living within that small little microcosm of happiness because you're laughing. You're getting enough oxygen to your brain because you're exhaling and you're laughing. And that's what comedy really is, you know. That's the beauty in it, is that you can say things and you can be funny all day long, you know, and still on the inside, you know, be this tortured soul. If you're a comedian, if you're one of those people, and I don't feel that way after I've made people laugh. It takes away some of that that darkness and sadness that I carry around with me like a 500-pound weight. See, no matter what anyone might tell you about, you know, childhood bullying and all that other stuff, for some people, you carry it for the rest of your life. Wounds don't always heal. And that's the other thing, too, is that if I had a way of extracting those years back and go back in time and be this person on the inside, you know, inside my mind, but, you know, relive my childhood, but with this intelligence, this emotional intelligence that I've got right now, my life would have been so much fucking simpler. Because with this broad base of knowledge that I have, especially about the human condition, ignorance of the truth is what destroys you. But if you know what it is, you can grow from it. And that's the real problem, is that, you know, there are some people in this world that, quite frankly, they need their ass beat. And I mean just fucking beat. You know, that's because of what they've done to others. You know? And I've had my ass beat a few times too. You know, for absolutely no reason. But I've also probably brought some of the shit on myself too, because, you know, I didn't know the audience that I was talking to. That's the thing about comedy, is that you can get beat up for absolutely no reason. You know, your intentions might be good, but, you know, sometimes your intentions aren't wanted. You know, and some people are just never, they're never going to have a sense of humor. They're never going to want to laugh. And I've got people that I used to know, that I used to talk to, that are absolutely fucking humorless. And it's because of the world, that the world has treated them in such a way, or they've been through some shit, to have stolen that process that allows them to smile and allow them to laugh. You know, they would rather focus on that myopic dot of whatever it is that afflicts them, than to open their mind and their eyes to a world of endless possibilities where you could probably crack a smile. I used to really hate working retail. And the reason why I used to hate it is because it was such a mundane job. The reason why it was so mundane is because I always got saddled with being a cashier. And the reason why is because I could do math. I could do math, and I could count, and I could give change with a smile, like a robot, and be kind to people, and always nice, and just do the right thing at night, you know. And I hated it, and the reason why is because it's like I would rather use my intellect for something a little more important, like, I don't know, solving other people's problems. But I got stuck on a cashier's job more times than I can count. And it wasn't because I was, you know, a bad customer service person. Or at least, from my perspective, it wasn't, because I was always helpful. My problem is I have one of those faces that, you know, because I've suffered enough indignity and trauma to where I don't look like I'm very friendly, even though you can have a conversation with me and you can say, oh, this guy's all right. You know, he just has that resting psychopath face, you know, that face that says possibly has a basement full of bodies, you know. That's a joke. I don't. The only thing I've got in my basement right now is a lot of clutter from my art studio. The fact remains is that some people have that look, you know, which is why when I do comedy and do deadpan humor, that's the reason why it comes off as being funny, is because I look a certain way and I play to that strength. And with comedy, you have to play to that strength. You know, if you look a little unusual, that's gonna bring people in. You know, if you sound a little weird, that's gonna bring people in. Like Bobcat Goldthwait, if you ever saw him when he was doing comedy, stand up comedy, and he still does. I think he still does. Guy was incredibly disarming because you didn't know what you were going. You did not know what you were going to get when he walked up on stage. And the guy had this delivery that you'd never heard it before. It was completely new. And of course now you see him now, it kind of comes with the furniture. You're more surprised that he sounds normal as opposed to his comedy skit. And the one thing the big thing that I really praise him for is his ability to take that talent and move it into a different medium entirely. He did this a film about it was a lost video footage of Bigfoot, and Willow Creek, I think, is the name of the movie. If you get a chance, watch that. That thing is, it's crazy. It's like the Blair Witch Project, but it's Bigfoot. And at the ending, you're just like, oh God, whoa, what the hell what did I just watch? And it's not funny. I mean, it's funny, but it's not. It's well done. He's done a lot of other stuff too. God Bless America was another movie that I enjoyed. And even though his politics and I may not always see eye to eye, he does have a pretty good beat on what is funny. And that's the thing about comedy, is that you never know really, truly what's going to be funny, what's going to stick and what's not. So you're more or less walking this tightrope, you know, with no aid and no net to catch you, you know, unless you're really good at it. And I see a lot of comedians out there that are just more or less doing, you know, the observational humor stuff. And I think that some of it's okay. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld more or less kind of wrote the book on that. And I give him a lot of credit. Bob Saget to a degree also. Very funny man. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. There's some people out there that I've looked at in their comedy, and I always wondered how they got there, you know? And then I've looked at people and thought, how did this guy get this job if he's supposed to be funny? And then I've gone back and actually seen some of their acts, and I'm like, that makes much more sense now, because it's like he's not funny on TV, but God dang, he's funny on stage. How does this happen? And it turns out, you know, it's script writing and that sort of thing. And that's a lot of what stand-up is, and that's a lot of what comedy is that sometimes when you're using your own words with your own voice, you can be funny. But if you're a comedically gifted person and you are using somebody else's words, the delivery can oftentimes fall flat, you know, because they're not your words. Now, I've seen like, if you watch comedies, right, like movie comedies, where the actor in question has had input, or maybe it's their material and it's being, you know, recreated, then you get something quite funny. Adam Sandler, who most of the time I could take or leave him, he's done some really funny stuff. Like Happy Gilmore is like my favorite golf movie ever, and I'm not a golf guy, but I thought, yeah, should I pick up that sport just to have fun with it, you know, not be that guy, but still try to pick up a sport. But he he had a lot to do with that film. He had a lot on the line with that film. He's done other stuff too, where he's not just a comedic actor. He actually has the ability to be funny. And but that's the thing. There are some people who are blatantly ripping off other people. I remember Dennis Leary when he first hit the scene. He was doing these commercials, you know, and I don't remember who it was for, but he was, you know, like the smoking guy who was angry, screaming at the world or whatever, and he was basically his own version of Bill Hicks. And that's been a point of contention. I remember Bill Hicks going on the, I think it was David Letterman, and they were talking about how he'd recently quit smoking, and he only did it to see if Dennis Leary would quit smoking. So that in of itself was, you know, pretty caustic. But Bill Hicks is he was one of those people who, when he did comedy, he was the kind of comedian that would make you think. And if you are a thinking person, though, that's the thing. You will find that that comedy has a way of helping you cope with the world. And that's the real problem right now in this world, is that nothing is funny. If you take a look at what's going on in the world right now, very little is funny. You can't make jokes about it. You can't look, if you look at this administration. I remember back in the 80s when Ronald Reagan was president, and I know that everyone talks about how Reagan was this, Reagan was that. Reagan was my president, and he was the first guy that I looked at and thought, this is a guy that actually understands what the office means. But people made fun of him incessantly because he was an old man. But the craziest part about it was that when Ronald Reagan was in the audience and people were making fun of him, he was laughing along with him because he understood that he was not only a target of the humor, but he was also not so serious about who he was where he could take a joke. And now, if you take a look at what's going on in the world, everyone has a grievance. Everyone has an axe to grind. Everyone's upset about something. And that destroys comedy across the board. So now comedians have to dial everything back. Although there are some that are fighting back. They're like, you know, I'll tell jokes about abortion. I'll tell jokes about whatever I want. Although I find very little funny about abortion at all. There's very few things I find funny about some of the social topics, which is why I resort to the more absurdist humor. I would much rather tell somebody, aliens abduct me from my eye color because it's rare, you know, and then have an absolutely serious conversation about alien abduction, even though that some of it isn't, you know, serious. Because here's the thing about alien abduction is that the minute you start talking about that, everyone pays attention to you like, uh-oh. You know, because you can, you know, and I've said this before, have a conversation with your friends about alien abduction and you will never go camping again with these people. Be like, fuck that noise. No, that son of a bitch was abducted by aliens and I'm not interested in doing any butt stuff. Not with that guy, not in anywhere, in any way, you know, and not if there's aliens, you know, Christ in heaven. I don't want to deal with those, you know, those hybrid children that they show me later on. Christ in heaven, who wants to see that at 3 o'clock in the morning? We just want to show you how your kid Kevin was doing. Oh, which Kevin? Is this Kevin 331 or Kevin 443? Because both of them have reading comprehension skills. They're pretty good. They're pretty smart. No, all kidding aside, because I make a lot of jokes about alien abduction, even though I've got some tics when it comes to that topic. But you start telling jokes about that stuff, and people are like, there's a very interesting part of our human condition where we fear things like that sort of thing because we are absolutely powerless against it. It's like you don't make jokes about the devil in possession, you know? I have. But then again, I have a different kind of relationship with, you know, with God and the devil than most people do, mostly because I've seen both sides. You know, I understand that there's an ongoing war for my soul, you know. Mostly it's like, it's more along the lines of, you know, it's like two credit agencies fighting, you know, two debt collectors trying to collect on the same debt. Good luck. You know, if you've mortgaged yourself to the hilt between multiple, you know, etheric entities, chances are they're probably going to have an interest in, like, I'm going to keep that motherfucker alive forever. Forever, if that's what it takes, until all you assholes say, no, we're not going to, you know, collect. Yeah, that's actually, I think that's been a recurring theme in some comic books or something like that. I'm not entirely sure, but when it comes right down to being comedy, if you're going to do comedy, if you're going to be good at it, you can be a comedian. I'm trying to figure out what my words are. I haven't had enough coffee today. even though it sounds like I'm a little animated, I'm taking time out of my busy day in order to do this show because I got stuff to do. But if you really want to be good at comedy, you have to have courage. And you can't be afraid of being what you really are. That's the truth. So if you're a weirdo, be a weirdo. If you are going to try and make people laugh, do it in such a way that they know it's for them. It's for their benefit, not for yours. Take people out of their element. When you see that they're down, give them something to laugh about. Give them something to smile about. But do it in a way that's honest and not borrowed and not stolen. Don't steal their time. Give to them something, you know, that they're going to carry with them in exchange. That's what real comedy is. That's changing somebody's paradigm with laughter. That's all it is. And if you can do that, you have a profound gift. Anyway, on that note, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to shut down for the day. I want to tell my brother again, hey, I'm sorry I missed your birthday, but this isn't something that, you know, that you would have expected anyway from me because we haven't talked in forever. But I thought I would wish him a happy birthday, a happy belated birthday. He's a great guy. He just has a lot of stuff on his plate and has absolutely no use for a crazy old guy like me in his life. So it's all right. But I hope you guys all have a fantastic week, and I'm going to try to come back on Sunday with some rando Nautica news. Unless, you know, maybe tomorrow I can get another podcast up, because I've got some things I got going on today. I got some errands to run, and hopefully, if I can, I'm going to try to get some rando Nautica stuff done. So you guys enjoy your day. Take care. Bye-bye.